This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. This is day three of our Spring Member Fest. We'd like to hear from you this hour. We certainly appreciate your support, and it is vital to the sustainability of public radio in Louisiana. The number 855-893-9753 to make your voice heard in a tangible way for support of this great organization that's been around for 40 years. And the number for us, after you call 855-893-9753, and you're in and out in less than 89.3 seconds. The number for us is 877-5217-5757. Too many numbers. 877-217-5757. We start with Aaron Hawley, who is the senior legal fellow for the Independent Women's Law Center. And Aaron Hawley is here to talk about what's been happening on Capitol Hill this week. The High Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, has been weighing in and reviewing a bill that became law in Louisiana involving admitting privileges for doctors who perform abortions. And U.S. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer reacted viscerally. He has apologized for this remark, but he's gotten heat from all sides of the political spectrum. Here's how he sounded in sizing up a couple of Supreme Court justices.
To them both. You have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price.
All right. Now, he was talking about retribution for Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, who were appointed by President Trump. And he said he meant no violence, but he certainly has elicited a response that I don't think he even expected, including from Lawrence Tribe, the noted liberal law professor, who says the remarks by Senator Schumer were inexcusable, and Chief Justice Roberts, according to Lawrence Tribe, was right to call him on his comments. Aaron Hawley, what is your take on the brouhaha regarding the remarks from Senator Schumer?
Well, thanks so much for having me. And if you listen to those remarks and the longer clip that you can get on YouTube or most anywhere on the news today, you'll see that the minority leader, as you said, stood on the steps of the Supreme Court and threatened directly two sitting Supreme Court justices by name. And he said that they will pay the price and that they won't know what hit them if they issue decisions with which the minority leader disagrees. And those comments are so outrageous, as you said, that everyone from Larry Tribe, who's a noted liberal icon, to the Chief Justice of the United States, to the American Bar Association, have all sort of decried those comments as something that's not suitable to anyone, much less someone who's in the highest levels of government.
Well, and Senator Schumer has, he's moved back from those, but he says he's from Brooklyn, from New York City, and people talk differently. As we know, the president says things like this quite often. So are we making too much of this, or is this something that should cause some kind of corrective action, perhaps censure or impeachment of Senator Schumer?
So that's a good question. So I think if you look at his comments, not how he described them, but the actual comments, they do seem to be a personal and direct threat. He, again, names the justices by name and says that they will pay the price. And as the American Bar Association said, at the very least, these comments are deeply troubling. And Senator Schumer is a member of the bar. He's an attorney. So possibly there's New York bar rules. Certainly that prohibits attorneys from threatening sitting judges. So it's just this whole statement at a rally on the Supreme Court steps was highly inappropriate at the very least.
But when he says pay the price, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's suggesting somebody beat up Kavanaugh or Gorsuch or go out and do something else to them. It could be a price in other ways, couldn't it?
Oh, sure. But I think if you listen to Senator Schumer's sort of non-apology, he got on the floor of the Senate yesterday and he basically said that he would use different words if he were doing it again. But the thing is that he was making these statements for the justices and their job as deciding cases. He specifically said that if you continue to decide cases in this awful manner. So he's talking about the judges, the justices, and their role as judges, or in this case, justices. So I don't buy his sort of after-the-fact explanation that he was talking about the Republican Party. So I think that it does, if you take the whole context at the Supreme Court steps, he gestures toward the court when he uses Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh's name, and he seems the words that he used all seem to point to him speaking about the justices rather than Republicans or the Republican Party.
All right. I think many agree that Chuck Schumer should have been called out on this, and he was, but he is from New York City, from Brooklyn, born in 1950, President Trump born in 1946. They have a lot in common, but politically they have a lot not in common. But based on what you know, as a man, is Chuck Schumer a better man than President Trump, or is President Trump a better man than Chuck Schumer?
Well, I can't profess to know either of them well enough to make that sort of qualification or decision. So I can only speak to the statements that we heard the minority leader make. And again, if we look at the Chief Justice's rebuke here, it's something that's highly unusual. The Chief Justice of the United States is part of a court that issues decisions. They don't often issue, very rarely do they issue public statements. So in this very rare public statement, he said that Senator Schumer's comments were both inappropriate and also dangerous, and that the court would continue to do its business without fear or favor. So at least in the Chief Justice's view, someone who I think we all agree is sort of reticent to weigh into political debates, he took the step of issuing the statement because he felt the sentiment expressed, the statements made by the minority leader, were quite serious.
Well, the Chief Justice has also on occasion called out the President of the United States as well. So,
absolutely.
I think both of them have said things they should not have said. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on with Erin Hawley. She is with the Independent Women's Law Center, legal fellow. Dan, you are on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, Ms. Hawley, would you agree that Trump was truthful for once about Obama judges and Reagan Bush judges, and that judges are just politicians wearing robes?
Are judges just politicians wearing robes? Erin Hawley? Okay, I think we may have lost her. Matt, he says, I think she's a no-go. So, by the way, the U.S. Supreme Court is, I think, an example of that. In the year of 2000, the vote was 5-4 to stop the vote count in Florida, which would have most likely made Albert Gore the president of the United States. And of the five justices who voted to stop it, you can bet all five of them voted for George Bush, and of the four justices who voted to keep it going, all four of them voted for Albert Arnold Gore. So, yeah, politics does involve courts at high levels, and maybe the highest level in this country. Lamar White, who's with us, the publisher of the Bayou Brief and also a lawyer with great degree from Southern Methodist University. Before we get to other matters, what do you make of this brouhaha over Chuck Schumer's remarks?
I mean, they were flippant, stupid remarks. He shouldn't have said what he said, but I don't think anyone seriously would believe that he was, you know, trying to incite violence against anybody.
Well, we live in an age where people are going to take partisan advantage of just about everything, and you can bet if the president had said something like this, the left would be all over him. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And in this case, I do commend people like Lawrence Tribe, who probably likes Chuck Schumer a lot. He did condemn Schumer's remarks. So there were people who were in Schumer's camp politically who said, look, this is a bridge too far.
Yeah.
Well, in Louisiana, we saw, based on this abortion case, John Neely Kennedy out on the courthouse steps in Washington, D.C. with the pro-lifers. And I can recall 30 years ago when he was with Buddy Romer when he vetoed two abortion bills in Louisiana and was being toasted by the pro-choicers. So what happened to John Neely Kennedy between age 38 and age 68.
Yeah, I wish I could have a good explanation for that, Jim. But, I mean, you know, Romer did lose.
He did.
And a lot of people attribute that to his veto of the abortion bill, other things.
Yeah.
The politics in this state probably have changed quite a bit in 30 years. So maybe he's reflective of some of those changes.
Well, Roy Fletcher, our guest earlier this week, said Kennedy is one of his former clients, said John Kennedy learned how to read a poll. And he's going to be seeking re-election in 2 years, will likely win another 6-year term in the U.S. Senate. And in 2024, I can see it now, Kennedy for president. Another John Kennedy coming from the Senate to the White House. Could it happen? We'll talk about a lot of things with Lamar White. Your number is 877-217-5757. Back in 90 seconds with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number, 877-217-5757. Lamar White, publisher of the Bayou Brief, is with us. And we're a reminder that this is day 3 of the Spring Member Fest, and your number for that is 855-893-9753, 855-893-WRKF. And today is $40 Friday, pledge $40. And today only you can choose to receive the WRKF clear vinyl tote bag. And you pledge $40 per month. In addition to the stadium tote, you can receive a pair of tickets for a single day during either the first weekend or the second weekend of Jazz Fest. 855-893-9753. We're talking about the world at large, and we live in an interesting world right now. And, of course, people are concerned for good reason about what's going to happen with coronavirus. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average, by the way, down another 700 points at the start today. So the Dow has tumbled from over 29,000 now to 25,421, about 4,000 points. And this has all happened in about 10 days. So it has not been a good 2 weeks for Donald John Trump, who was touting his stock market performance as a reason for re-election. Ricky Causey writes to Lamar saying, we have, in Ricky's words, two sexual predators sitting on the Supreme Court, and this is where we're debating. The vulgar absurdity that these men are voting on abortion rights calls for such outrage and anger, and he's talking about Chuck Schumer. Lamar, your thoughts?
I mean, he is right. Clarence Thomas and Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, both incredibly accused of sexual harassment, and they both are going to be deciding this case. I guess the holdout, would potentially be John Roberts, because there's a feeling that he's an institutionalist and that overturning 40-something years of precedent is probably not something that he wants to do.
Okay, Tommy. Writes to Lamar, Trump, the president, blasted Justices Sotomayor and Ginsburg this past week, and Roberts said nothing about that. Trump, writes Mr. Wright, Tommy Wright, has endangered Judge Jackson in the Roger Stone case, along with Stone on many occasions. Where is the sense of fair play? What about the judge with the Latino heritage that Trump denigrated? That's from Tommy.
I was thinking the same thing. I heard a little bit of your previous guest, and I was thinking the same thing, that Roberts, sort of telling that the last time he ever said anything was about something that Trump said, but not about something that said with respect to a fellow justice on the Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who said Trump said that she should recuse himself, or herself, rather. And you would think that he would have said something about that, and a few other things, too.
Well, John Roberts is a conservative. He was appointed by President Bush and went straight to the court as the Chief Justice. He did save the Affordable Care Act, which in a few days will be 10 years old, and he is probably the swing vote on this abortion case. Is there any indication how Justice Roberts will decide?
I think the fact that he prevented implementation of the law indicates that he's not inclined to, change the law fundamentally, which is what the Louisiana case would do. And, furthermore, the Supreme Court's already ruled and overturned a Texas law that's essentially identical to the one Louisiana passed. So it'd be overturning not just, you know, old precedent, but recent precedent.
There's a story today in several newspapers. It's on page 4A of The Advocate. A federal judge yesterday sharply rebuked Attorney General William Barr's handling of the special counsel's Russia report, saying Barr made misleading public statements to spin the investigation's findings in favor of President Trump and has shown a lack of candor. Federal Judge Reggie Walton delivered the criticism in a 23-page order in which he directed the Justice Department to provide him with an unredacted version of the report so that he could decide if any additional information from the document could be publicly disclosed. The scolding was unusually blunt, with Walton saying Barr had appeared to make a calculated attempt to influence public opinion about the report in ways favorable to the president. The rebuke tapped into lingering criticism of Barr from Democrats in Congress and Special Counsel Robert Mueller himself that he had misrepresented some of the investigation's most damning findings. What do you make of this, Lamar White?
I actually read that opinion, the 23-page opinion earlier, and it's a very well-written and cogent opinion. And, you know, anyone that lived through that experience of watching the Attorney General come out and issue a statement that really wasn't in, directly contradicted what the even the redacted report had said. And then the author of the report, Robert Mueller, says that the Attorney General interpreted incorrectly. But I think that the judge's point was that Bill Barr did that because he was trying to set a narrative. And, you know, it's been successful. A lot of people think that no collusion occurred
as a result. 877-217-5757 in our remaining time with Lamar White. I'm getting lots of emails and we'll get to as many of them as we can. And, of course, many are juiced up about what's happening in the Democratic presidential primaries and caucuses. And Lamar, the Las Vegas odds now have Joseph Robinette Biden as an 88% chance of getting the Democratic nomination. And this has all happened in 6 days or so. It's an amazing turnabout, isn't it?
It really is. The consolidation of the sort of the moderate wing of the Democratic Party was really sweeping and really sudden and well-timed for Joe Biden. But, you know, if it hadn't been, Super Tuesday probably would not have provided him with the firewall that he provided, you know, for example, Hillary Clinton with in 2016.
David in Atlanta. Good morning, David. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, David. You're on with Lamar.
Good morning to everyone. You know, CNBC reported that Bernie Sanders wants price controls on every single apartment in the country.
Okay, well, I think Bernie's not going to be your nominee, David.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. That would be, and that's my point. That would be so easy for Trump to defeat somebody like that. But have you heard the latest that the Green Party is going to run a candidate? Now, that person could do to say the nominee like Joe Biden, what Jill Stein did to Hillary in close states, that could easily be the difference and push the electoral votes to Trump.
All right.
So I would hope a Republican like Jeff Flake would run or Kasich on a Republican moderate ticket.
Well, that might actually hurt. It might hurt Biden more than it would hurt Trump. And James Carville on this show 2 days ago, Lamar, said Jill Stein was a Russian agent.
Yes. You know, so I actually met her once. She came down to New Orleans for a conference I was at. Yeah, and I kind of agree with the caller. Like, if, you know, a third-party candidate could really interfere with Joe Biden's chances because, you know, we have Democrats especially have not historically proven the ability to consolidate behind someone like Joe Biden in a close election. And I think Trump actually probably will benefit from a clear field this time.
And if Bernie Sanders has his feelings hurt enough, he might run as a third-party candidate, and I think that would be disastrous for the Democrats.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of his core supporters, they may stay home if he's not the nominee. That's a real threat.
Well, it would be weird, but you might see a 77-year-old nominee with a 79-year-old running mate. that would be an interesting ticket, wouldn't it?
Yes.
But Biden and Sanders, who knows? But that would be one way to neutralize Bernie Sanders.
But, you know, so too would be to choose Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, she has a lot of opinions and stances that are similar to Senator Sanders. But as we know, those two apparently don't like each other very much. And that may be why Senator Warren did not endorse Bernie yesterday when she got out. But I would imagine Biden will choose a woman, and it probably would be Warren or Klobuchar or Harris, one of the others who ran for president. I don't think it'll be Tulsi Gabbard, though.
I don't think it'll be Tulsi Gabbard either.
Well, we're going to return and spend a few more minutes with Lamar White, one of the most compelling and provocative surveyors of Louisiana in national politics and life at the Bayou Brief. 877-217-5757. We're back after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, and we want to keep you in the fold, or perhaps have you join the fold for the first time in 40 years. If you've never joined, this is an opportunity to become a member of WRKF, and you can do so by calling us at 855-893-9753, 855-893-9753, to show your support for one of the great treasures of our community. And today is $40 for Friday. You can pledge $40 and choose to receive the WRKF clear vinyl tote bag. So $40, 877-217-5757 is our number. And again, for WRKF, and we'd certainly like for you to call before the hour is up, 855-893-9753. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Lamar White. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. You know something, from the turnout that there was for the primary for the Democrats to vote, it was so large, I think that any Democrat that runs could be elected. Remember how many people marched on the day of the inauguration? I think it's a lot of people want him out of there.
All right. Let's get Lamar's response. Lamar?
A lot of people want Trump out? I think I would agree with that.
Well, and a lot of people didn't support him. In fact, 53.9% of the people voted for somebody else in the 2016 election, and Hillary Clinton got a plurality of the votes. She beat Trump by more than 2 percentage points. And I had Roy Fletcher on the other day, and we were talking about this, Lamar. I think Trump has a fair point in that if popular vote decided the presidency, the campaigns would be run differently. But 2.1% of the votes is not a close election. There have been many elections through the years much closer than that. Humphrey Nixon was closer than that. Ford Carter was about that amount. So Kennedy Nixon was closer than that. Gore Bush was closer than that. Hillary won that race by a pretty good margin when the overall votes are tallied. But we have this Electoral College. And if Donald Trump wins this time, he probably will win again without winning the vote, which would mean three times in the last six elections, Lamar, if Trump were to win without getting the overall vote, the person who won the vote lost the election. How can Americans accept that? How can Americans accept that?
Yeah, it's a little absurd, especially in, 21st century America. But, one of the questions I would have is, how would Donald Trump have run his campaign differently? I mean, he ran his campaign in 2016 basically on national television.
He did, but as we know, he did make stops in Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. And Hillary Clinton, much to her regret, spent a lot of time in Arizona trying to run up the score, and it didn't work. But if it were a national campaign, people would be in New Orleans. They might even be in Baton Rouge. But let's face it, Biden and Trump will never step foot in Louisiana between now and Election Day. Biden might come here for the primary. He may do that. But after that, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, if they do show up, it's probably a bad sign. Like something bad must have happened.
Like a disaster of some kind, yeah.
Like a disaster.
A hurricane, yeah.
Flooding in Baton Rouge,
Yeah.
4 years ago.
Right. Mike in New Iberia. Mike, Good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Lamar White. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. On the discussion of the Electoral College from 55 years ago at USL, if I remember correctly, the major focus of that was to still allow representation of the smaller states. California and New York could probably elect any president they wanted, and if that became the case, then there would be no purpose in engaging the middle of America in the conversation. I think Electoral College serves that purpose.
All right. Well,
not some grand conspiracy. Thank you.
All right. Well, if that's the case, then we should run a governor's election and give every parish a proportional amount of the votes. That's how nonsensical the Electoral College is. A vote is a vote. I don't care if it comes from New York City or New Iberia, where you are, Mike. A vote should be a vote, and the way it is now, votes count more in certain places than they do in others. And James Carville has pointed out that 18% of the country, 18% of the people elect 52% of the U.S. senators in this country. We've got problems beyond the Electoral College, but Lamar, it is a case in which one party is being disproportionately affected adversely by this, and it's a Democratic Party. And because of that, politics being politics, and if the shoe were on the other foot, I have no doubt that it would be the same kind of fight. But the Republicans want to keep it the way it is, and Democrats want to change it.
Sure. I mean, the only difference, I think, is that Republicans are actively trying to suppress minority votes, and we saw that in Texas on Super Tuesday, where there were three-hour wait times to vote in the primary. We've seen this in Georgia and in North Carolina as well. It's a little different than the Democrats' approach. There's a sort of a more open tent, big tent mentality.
877-217-5757 for Lamar White, publisher of the Bayou Brief, one of the fine websites involving Louisiana politics anywhere. And Lamar, you in many ways are going against the grain, as you know. For whatever reason, conservatives seem to dominate certainly talk radio, the social media landscape. You're out there fighting the fight for your cause, and you get a lot of grief from some of these conservatives on the other side. It is an interesting world in which we live, and now with this keyboard courage phenomenon where people go on and anonymously say things about people, you got a lot of real losers out there attacking you.
Well, people have been attacking me online probably for 15 years now. So at some point, you just have to have thick skin and learn to roll with the punches. Part of the whole thing.
Ann on Bluebonnet. Ann, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Ann.
Yes, good morning. I have two suggestions, in the interim while we talk about this Electoral College stuff. One is they need to, if people don't want to completely get rid of the concept of the Electoral College, to preserve some sort of ability for smaller states and more rural states to participate in a meaningful way, they could raise the number of delegates that the more populous states get. It's pretty ridiculous that, California's vote is so diluted and New York's vote is so diluted. It they could still have the concept but raise the numbers. So that's one sort of practical solution to that. Another would be, if there are some swing states where the population's pretty close, get a bunch of liberals to move to those states for the year of the election,
Well, okay, I think if that were the strategy, you would bet that both sides would be playing that game. But Washington, D.C., for example, should have two U.S. senators. Washington, D.C. does not have two U.S. senators. They do have three electoral votes, but I think we know why they don't have two U.S. senators, Lamar.
Another alternative would be, and I've seen this promoted by a number of groups out there, would be just to do proportional representation of the Electoral College delegates. So if, the Democrat wins 40% of Louisiana, then 40% of our votes go toward the Democratic candidate, and the remaining 60% go to the Republican. Sort of solve the problem.
Well, we have 8 electoral votes now, so it would work. But what if it were 50-50 and you had 9 electoral votes? 4.5? You give each 4.5? Maybe that would be the way to
do it. I guess so. I guess you get a half a vote.
877-217-5757. Jeff in Tigerland. Jeff, good morning. You're on with Lamar.
Good morning. I was just going to call and talk about the history of the Electoral College real quick. So after the Revolution, we kind of see this unleash of democracy with more and more people being a little bit rebellious in the streets. And we realize that the Articles of Confederation just simply weren't working. And so that's why we moved to create the Constitution. And it really was an effort to rein in that democracy. And part of that was the Electoral College. Now, to be sure, part of that was to create more balance with the smaller states. But we can't ignore the fact that it is, much like the Senate, an anti-democratic institution.
How many states were there at that time when the Electoral College was formed?
It wouldn't have been many more than the original 13 colonies.
There you go.
I can't think of the number off the top of my head.
I think it was 13.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jeff.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Bill downtown. Bill, good morning. You're on to talk Louisiana with Lamar White. Hi, Bill.
Hello. You know, the Republicans masterfully gamed this whole system, right? And I think you correctly pointed out that this winner-take-all thing in the state is, you know, what really unbalances if you proportionally cut up the votes based on the popular vote in each state, then something more like the actual popular vote would be the result. You know, but we've chunked up everything into these big blocks of states, and all you need is one more vote in a state, and you get them all. That's what's really killing us, and that makes Louisiana, like, they don't care about us. The Democrats, you know, they've written it off to Trump, and Trump's like, well, we're going to win that one. Why waste our time?
Well, yeah, and you can't blame either side because they have to go for these swing states, and they're only about 10 at the most, really about 5 that they'll be going after. Florida is one of them, obviously. North Carolina, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, a few others, but that's where the real action will be in this campaign. And President Trump carried every one of those states in 2016, all of those swing states, every one of them. And he's got to hold on to most of them to win again. And polls right now show Joseph Robinette Biden 5.5 points ahead of Donald John Trump in an election right now, but that's not worth very much, 33.5 weeks to the finish line. We'll be back, spend a bit more time with Lamar White, get his take on some state matters as well, and you're listening to Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on WRKF. The show is made possible through listeners like you, and we would like to hear from you. We've got 13 minutes to the finish line today and this week, 855-893-9753, 855-893-9753. We'd like for you to contribute at any level that's comfortable, and today you can get in at $40 and receive the tote bag, so let's do it. 855-893-9753, wrapping it up with Lamar White of the Bayou Brief, and I'm sure we'll be calling on Lamar on more than one occasion during the legislative session, which starts Monday, and Lamar, battle lines are drawn. The governor's not playing a real good hand, but he is the governor, and in Louisiana, we give our governors inordinate amounts of power. Is it an equal fight between him and the legislature?
Probably so. I think equal's probably about right.
The governor can, of course, with line item veto, he can cut projects. This governor has been, he's been careful about doing that, though. He was once a lawmaker himself. He knows how it feels. But will he have to play hardball to work with a legislature that is so overwhelmingly Republican?
You know, probably so, especially considering that, among other things, they're talking about eliminating the collateral source rule. I just don't see that happening if they try to do that without a veto.
And you have a story today about a contributor to Insurance Commissioner Jim Donilon. This gentleman, mm-hmm. I think, is going to jail, and Donilon got some money from him. Go ahead and tell the story, and I may have a follow-up or two, but what's the take about
this?
Yeah,
so a guy in North Carolina, top Republican donor named Greg Lindbergh, became a billionaire basically by buying up these tiny little life insurance companies and then loaning himself money from those companies. He was accused of attempting to bribe the North Carolina insurance commissioner, which is also an elected position like Louisiana's. But the insurance commissioner there actually was a secret FBI informant and had taped all the conversations with him. So they got a conviction yesterday on two counts of public corruption against this person. He just so happens to have also contributed about $25,000 to $30,000 to Louisiana's insurance commissioner, Jim Donilon, who previously basically approved Lindbergh in purchasing some life insurance companies here in Louisiana.
Has this man Lindbergh contributed to anybody else in Louisiana?
No, not directly.
Yeah. Okay, but Donilon won the election. In a case like this, sometimes candidates give the money back, but at this point, I don't know. What in your estimation?
Yeah, well, I mean, Donilon was aware that this person had raised some major red flags during the campaign a year ago, and his opponent actually called on him to return these donations. So it's sort of baffling that he really completely ignored those requests and still hasn't done anything about them. Essentially $25,000 to $30,000 in his campaign account.
And this was a federal conviction or a state conviction?
It was a federal conviction, yeah.
Federal conviction. So I wonder if this man has contributed to the president, who could pardon him.
I would bet good money that he has, yes.
It might happen. Lamar, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. Keep up the good work.
All right.
Take care. BayouBrief.com for Lamar White. And in studio is Renee Chatelaine. One of the treasures, like WRKF, in this community. She, of course, has formerly been at the Manship Theater. I saw Boss Gags there last night, filled the place, and 15 years now for the Manship Theater. And you are involved with all the artistic endeavors in Baton Rouge as president and CEO of the Arts Council. For those unfamiliar, before we get to a few topics that are important, the Arts Council deals with these entities in what way?
So we support the arts sector through advocacy, through resources and education, and we also help the community using the arts as a medium to make positive change.
And you were a dancer, too, and dealt with the Arts Council when you were doing the Nutcracker, right?
Absolutely. You know, the Arts Council has been a part of my life since I was a child in dancing, you know, for other companies here. So it's near and dear to my heart, but I also know the impact that it can make in this capital region.
Now, when I walk down Laurel Street and I see the Bogan Fire Station, I think Arts Council, but is it true? You're moving?
We are moving, and we love the Bogan Fire Station, and I think there are going to be great plans for that coming. But for I hear it's going to be a fire museum, and they're working toward that effort. But we wanted a place where exclusively we could offer services to the arts sector. And so we're very excited that we'll have artist workspaces and rehearsal space and really lots of places where artists can collaborate, where their boards can meet, and we can have lots of gatherings that are significant and can improve the community and provide a space for the community.
Our very quick-minded listeners always note these things. Saying a fire museum, do you have all kinds of pyrotechnics? Is that what happens?
You know, that's not my realm. Staying in the arts realm, and I'm telling you, there'll be lots of metaphorical fireworks coming in this new building,
okay,
which is going
to
excite this community.
It's going to be located where?
So it's we're repurposing and renovating the old district attorney's office on St. Ferdinand, and it's a triangular shape, mid-century modern building. We are so excited. It's going to be a really iconic structure in that area of downtown by City Court.
Okay. How long will it take?
We're hoping to have a grand opening December 2020, so this is going to move very quickly.
And you are, of course, a lawyer as well. You're probably in that building for other reasons at some point.
Well, it's very nostalgic, and it's nostalgic for some of the other lawyers who also support the arts, knowing, and we love the fact that we can repurpose a building and put it back into commerce. It's been empty for about 2 years.
Okay. The Ebb and Flow Festival. Coming soon to a theater near you.
That's right. And all of downtown. We're so excited about this year's Ebb and Flow Festival, which will bring together lots of community efforts, including Bayou Cirque's Circus Festival. We'll have Healthy BR and their Family Fit Day as part of it. And we'll be able to celebrate Art Flow, which is a juried visual art competition we do in partnership with Forum 225. There's lots of community groups coming together, artists. It's a great way to bring your family down and experience art on all levels, from performing to visual art. It's really going to be fantastic. And that's April 4th and 5th downtown.
April 4th and 5th. And,
yes.
Another big event coming later this month.
Yes. So March 19th, we have our Hall of Distinction event with the River City Jazz Masters, and we are honoring Baton Rouge's finest, Herman Jackson. And this award that we give is in honor of Alvin Batiste, and it is for lifetime commitment to jazz and jazz art in our community. And so what's more fitting than to have Herman come? And we're excited to say that his brother Randy will come, and he's flying in to present the award at the concert that will actually also have Jasmia Horn performing. She's an up-and-coming vocalist and has had sold-out shows in New York and in Washington, D.C., and we're excited to have her as well.
Well, it's good work for Renee Chatelaine. How many years now is the president CEO of the Arts Council?
5 years.
5 years. Five years. Time does go by quickly. And I recall when I was station manager at WRKF, we used to receive about $10,000 a year from the Arts Council, as did many other artistic people, some more, some a little less than that. But money is tighter now, isn't it?
Yes, but you know what's so exciting is that with this building, we're also launching a sustainability fund where we're going to be able to hopefully raise enough money to provide that sort of financial resource to the arts.
The symphony and...
Absolutely. Yeah. And to lots of new and emerging arts organizations. You know, we have a brand new company here, LATCO, that is an improv, a comedy improv. And they've just opened a small theater in Mid-City. And we want to celebrate our established organizations, the ballet and the symphony and the opera. And we want to also support new artists, individual and organizations in this process. So we look for our public launch of that campaign, but we're hoping to have public support so that we can provide artists with these types of resources.
And here's one. Holly in the Garden District says, in your tenure at the Manship, who was the most memorable performer in that time? You were there for, was it 3 years?
I was there 5 years
as well. 5 years as well. Jeez.
5 years as well. Wow, that's a hard question because people bring so many different things. Mavis Staples is my absolute favorite.
I'll take you there.
Absolutely. Respect. And Martin Short was also very iconic.
Martin Short. And last night it was Bob Skaggs. Put on a good show. He's almost 76 years old. And
so exciting what's happening there at Manship Theater and at the Shaw Center for the Arts.
But as we part company today, we do want to note that this is the third day of the Spring Member Fest, and the money that comes from you through membership and underwriting, the listeners, comprises well over 80% of the budget for WRKF. And this station, there is a misconception by many. It gets no state support at all. Now, Louisiana Public Broadcasting is a state agency and receives several million dollars a year, and should, for the work they do, the great work they do at LPB. But WRKF does not get any of that, and the federal funding that the station receives goes right back to where it came from to get all the programs you hear from National Public Radio, NPR. So the money that is derived from listeners is the reason why this station has been around for four decades, and we would like to hear from you. This is an opportunity to call 855-893-9753. You're in and out fewer than 89.3 seconds. And Renee Chatelaine, you're nodding your head. I know you want all the artistic entities, including this one, to thrive and flourish in the years to come.
Absolutely. You know, Baton Rouge is a great place to live because of places of artists and all those endeavors, and certainly this radio station is one of those great cultural entities that makes our life great here. So let's support it.
Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Until Monday, for Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.